Regina Beth Hill.
Okay, I have 5 o'clock. My name is John Olmsted. I am the chairman of the Samberton Board of Selectmen, and I would like to read the governor's preamble before we get started. Good evening,
okay.
Mr. Chairman of the Samberton Board of Selectmen. I am declaring that an emergency exists, and I am invoking the provisions of RSA 91-A:2, subparagraph 3B. Federal, state, and local officials have determined that gatherings of where social distancing cannot be sustained pose a substantial risk to our community in its continuing effort to combat the spread of COVID-19 virus. In concurring with their determination, I also find that this meeting is imperative to the continued operation of the town of Samberton government and services, which are vital to public safety and confidence during this emergency. As such, this meeting will be conducted without a quorum of the body physically present in the same location. In accordance with Governor Sununu's Emergency Order 12 and pursuant to Executive Orders 2004 and 2023. At this time, I also welcome members of the public accessing this meeting remotely. Even though this meeting is being conducted in a unique manner under unusual circumstances, the usual rules of conduct and decorum apply. Any person found to be disrupting this meeting will be asked to cease the disruption. Should the disruptive behavior continue thereafter, the person will be removed from this meeting. Please note that all votes that are taken during this meeting shall be done by roll call vote. I would ask that if you wish to speak, please state your name and wait until the chairman recognizes you and gives you the floor. This will minimize the confusion of two voices coming over the phone. Also, if you can mute your microphone while others are talking, it will cut out any background noise that may make it hard for others to hear the conversation. Let's start the meeting by taking a roll call attendance. When each member states their name and address, please also state whether there is anyone in the room with you during this meeting, which is required under the right to law no. I am John Olmsted. I am the chair of the select board. I live in Samberton, and I am alone tonight.
This is Jim Dick. I'm the vice chair of the board of selectmen, and I am alone.
This is Trish Stafford. I am the town administrator for the town of Samberton, and I am at my home in Guilford alone.
Tom, are you there? Tom Solotello, are you there? Okay, I guess Tom has not joined us. We do have two selectmen, which is a quorum, which means that we can't allow this meeting to continue. So I will start off with, is there any public comment from anyone out in radio land? Okay, hearing none, I will start off. Item number one on new business is the planning zoning letter.
Yes.
Steve, are you there?
Pardon me?
Yes, yes, Steve Lauren.
Steve
Lauren's here.
All right.
Okay, Trish, you want to start us off since this letter was addressed to you? Trish, are you still there?
Mr. Chairman, this is Attorney Warren Lake. I'm the one who wrote the letter. So if you'd like me to address this, I'd be happy to.
Okay. Jim, are you still there? Jim?
Yep, I'm here.
Jim Dick still? Okay. I thought I lost everybody.
No.
I couldn't hear Trish. Okay. Mr. Lake, then go ahead and summarize what you've put in the letter.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members of the board. As noted, I'm Attorney Warren Lake from Samberton, and I'm representing Mrs. Regina Beth Hill of 15 Plummer Road in Samberton. At Trish's request, I submitted a letter to her yesterday outlining an issue we've had regarding her attempts to obtain what I used to call a building permit, but I guess it's a certification or certificate of zoning compliance. And again, I summarized the details in that letter, and I'll give you a little bit more background perhaps. Going back to August, it really has been a long ordeal for Gina. She lost her husband of almost 49 years back in August, and at that time she realized that the home where she lives is something that she could no longer likely afford for very long. And she lives there with her adult son who has a brain injury, and so it's just the two of them. And so her plan was to put her house on the market, sell the home, which is an old colonial, 1800s, in good shape, but sizable and has expenses. She wanted to sell the house and then build a more affordable home on the lot she owns across the road. It's a 3.22-acre lot. And so she initiated the process to obtain a septic system approval, and that was the first step. And it took months of back and forth and discussions with the code enforcement officer and with her first septic designer, who both raised this issue. And the key issue here is when the lot was subdivided in 1984, the land was owned by Philip and Sybil Connolly, and again, they owned the land at 15 Plummer Road. They also owned a lot that included the 3.2 acres that totaled about 24 acres, let's say. And so at that time, in 1984, the Connollys put in what's called a minor subdivision application, and with the intent of creating a 3.2-acre lot, which they did, along with the backland. And they subsequently decided to sell that backland. And the reason for the 3.2-acre lot, number one, it's a conforming size lot. It's agriculturally zoned, so you need 3 acres of land. The second reason is the septic system, or at least the leach field, for the home at 15 Plummer Road sits on that 3.2 acres lot. Now, the Connollys obviously did not intend to build a house on that lot. They had no need to have that considered. Pardon me?
It was just Tom Solotello coming in. We now have Selectman.
Fantastic. Hello, Tom. It's Warren. I'm talking about the Connollys, and I'm talking about Gina Hill's property. I'm just going over the letter. I was just at the point where I was describing why the 3.2-acre lot was created. It was created so that the Connollys could sell the backland, keep the 3.2 acres with the septic system that serves the house at 15 Plummer Road. Well, the minor subdivision process at that time was intended to be a less restrictive way of subdividing land. And I'm aware of this because in those days, mid-80s, I was involved with town government as a selectman, chairman of the zoning board. I was on all the committees just as you are now. And I do recall, this minor subdivision process. And, again, what it was about was someone has a lot of parcel of land and they want to divide into two lots. Well, they could do so. Even if the lot was less than 5 acres, they could do so without a need for a septic tank design, or a septic system design, I should say. So obviously the Connollys, they weren't going to build a new house on that lot. They didn't need a septic system design. So they went through this minor lot subdivision, and for whatever reason, the surveyor put in tiny letters on this 3.2-acre lot the notation, not a building lot. And so there it is on the record, not a building lot, on this plan. It gets approved, gets recorded. And so my understanding, and what's always been the practice to my knowledge in this town, has been when you have a situation like that with a note that said that at the time as part of a minor subdivision, it does not mean that for all time this is not a buildable lot. It simply means that at that time they didn't get the septic system design done, and it's just giving notice to folks out there that, okay, for those that moment, they're not building a house there. And the practice was always, you know, in the future, if someone wants to build a house, go right ahead, go out and get your septic system design approved by DES, and if you meet all the other requirements, you know, you have a buildable lot. And so that's my contention, and the issue that's come up, again, with Stephen Loren, who I respect, I understand he's trying to do a good job, but he's raised this issue several times over these months, and somewhat gone back and forth a few times, and at any rate, we're at the point where Gina, after months with one septic designer who was not fulfilling the job, she fired that one and got another fellow in there who quickly was able to go in and create a plan and within a reasonable time submit it to the health officer who signed off on it, got sent down to DES, and came back approved within a number of days. And the expectation was that once that was in hand, that Gina would be able to proceed with her application for a certificate of zoning compliance. Well, it didn't turn out that way. Once that was obtained, the issue again, Stephen raised the issue of, oh, we've got this note on this plan, and now that has to be addressed. And we met with Stephen last week, Gina and I, to go over this situation. And at that time and previously, Stephen had indicated that it would be necessary for Gina to get a new survey plan that modified the old plan, and by modifying it in the way that it would simply take off this note, take off this not a buildable lot note, not a building lot note, and go through the planning board process, public notice, public hearing, time and expense of surveying, and, you know, again, after that meeting, I thought about it more, and it just dawned on me, you know, this is not a planning board issue, not at all. I mean, this note on the plan is really irrelevant, and, you know, it shouldn't be the thing that holds up Gina from proceeding with her application. So that is my summary. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer those.
Warren had called me because he assumed, rightly so, that I was on the planning board back in, the, I think it was 85, or in the 80s, when this came before the planning board. And I finally got to the point where I remembered some of the discussion, and I don't know why they put a note on the plan. Well, I do know why, because the septic system for that house is on that, I guess, 3-acre property, and I guess they were concerned about that. And I think that may have been the reason for the note on the plan. I read Warren's analysis again after talking with him, and I would agree with Warren that as of now, that is a building lot. It meets all the specifications by the town and the state in terms of a septic system, which is required for a building lot, and it does meet the standards. And based on that, I think the selectmen can go ahead
and issue a building permit for that lot without having to go through either a minor subdivision or back to the planning board, because the subdivision was already done. And why do it again? It's not worth making the property owner going through that additional expense when it's really, I don't think, warranted. And so I would agree with Warren's analysis of the situation and support his viewpoint.
This is John Olmsted. My question is how do we get that not a building lot off of that official document?
All right. John, I can address that. I just don't think there's any need to. It doesn't have any significance other than, you know, to give notice to the public. If someone were going to do a title search and they're looking at a plan and they might say, oh, by the way, it's got this little note on it, and that's all it's doing. You know, it's not, and then the person would investigate further. And, you know, if this lot were being sold today, for example, if Gina just said, we're going to sell that lot, and they, again, a title search is done, well, then that person would explore what was needed, and they would find out, oh, all you need is a septic system design, and we'll give you a building permit, because that, again, was what the intent was. I mean, there are other situations where this has happened and in town, and it's probably going to come up again. And so I don't see any need. There's no basis for it. And Stephen's requirement, as I noted in my letter, I mean, you know, there's nothing that he's shown me that says that there's a statute or regulation or ordinance that requires some kind of modification to this plan as part of the consideration of Gina's application for the building permit. So, you know, you can't just make this stuff up. And that's, unfortunately, I'm feeling that's what's going on.
Yeah, my comment wasn't like that. My comment was, how can we get it off of there so that this doesn't happen again?
John, that's a policy issue. That's a policy issue for the planning board. I mean, they want to consider adopting something in the ordinances or the regulations that will address this circumstance. That would be all well and good. But there's nothing there now. And, again, you know, how are you going to get it off? There's no need to get it off Gina's plan or the Connolly plan. I just don't see that it's a planning board issue for her at this time.
Well, I agree with you on that. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to put off or not have somebody in the future look at that plan and say, oh, this isn't a buildable lot. They can't do that.
Well, and it becomes a buildable lot in the record. Everybody's going to see a house on the darn thing. You know, they know it's a buildable lot. I mean, you put a note in the file, you put a note in the file, and the tax records are going to show there's a house on it, and those are going to be public and viewable online. I mean, you know, I just don't get it. You know, that's not going to be a thing where you have to go through a process of getting a surveyor to go out there and do a new plan, and then you go before your board, John, the planning board, and at a hearing and say, look, here we are. We're just going to take this note off. I mean, that's ridiculous. And so, you know, again, as a policy, you may want to develop something for the planning board if this ever does come up, or for the selectmen, so that you'll have something that gives people direction. But again, the old days, you know, as Tom has said, you know, I mean, the way things are done, I mean, you know, there was the minutes. If you look at the minutes, for example, I mean, there's no record of even why this note was put on the plan. If you read the minutes from 1984, and, things were just done differently.
I did read them.
Yeah.
I did read them this afternoon.
Yeah.
And having been on the planning board and being the selectman liaison to the planning board right now, I'm trying to figure an easy way of getting that wording off of the document so that this question doesn't come up again by somebody in the future.
Right.
So that Gina doesn't have to go through this again.
Well, I appreciate that, but, you know, if Gina gets her permit, I mean, it's not going to be her case, and once it's not as if someone's going to build a house out there without having compliance with the zoning, with the getting that certificate of zoning compliance. And if she built a house and sold it in the future, you know, it becomes a moot point.
Yeah. Okay. Jim, you're being awful quiet on this one.
I just wanted to find out. I know Steve had reached out to NHMA. Did you get any update from them, Steve?
No, I've not heard back. They said that Steve Buckley was going to respond.
Okay.
So it was the question of in which way could the note that not a building lot be removed, and I have suggested to Regina Hill that it is a plan, you know, it's a subdivision plan that was sent to the planning board at a public hearing, and that approval was based on, you know, what was in the minutes and what was discussed, and the minutes really—it's not really clear why that note was put on there. Again, as Warren Lake had suggested, the applicants had not intended to build, but then where it went from that to having a note on a plan, I don't know. But that is a plan that was approved by the planning board. It's recorded at the Registry of Deeds. It's available for public review, you know, by anybody in the public, and it is on the plan that it's, you know, anything else that's on that plan is a record that was approved by the board. So what I had said was that the only way to remove that is to go back to the board to amend that plan, and I would recommend to the board that they waive the conditions for a new survey. That's not necessary. It's just simply to modify the plan that says it's not a building lot. But my question to Attorney Buckley was, is there any other way besides going to the planning board that could be removed, whether there be a modified deed for that property that refers to the plan but then says that it's no longer needed, that note is no longer needed?
You're already a step too far ahead. The first question is, does that note have legal standing, right?
It's
a really cool lot. Does that mean it has a legal ramification if it shows up on the plan? Probably not. So if that doesn't have, just because somebody wrote on there not a building lot, doesn't automatically mean it's got legal standing to restrict the use of the property. And if it doesn't, then we don't have to worry about taking it off. If it does, then we need a process to do it correctly.
Right. And I've not heard back from...
Like Warren said, if you had an annotation that said not a buildable lot, which is a different word, which could have different implications, that gets changed by the fact that the proper septic design was done and approved, which then makes it a buildable lot because it had all the other requirements. So I'm not as interested in how we remove it as whether or not it actually means anything to be on the plan.
Yeah, and then that lot, that is a lot of record. It meets all the requirements for our zoning for me to issue a building permit on it. It's simple. However, it's a lot of record that has that condition that's recorded at the registry about building.
If I can just jump in, I don't see it as a condition. Again, it's a note that gives notice to people, but there's no covenant of any kind. There was no agreement with the town never to build there. It seems really overbearing here to suggest that, you know, you've got to do something to take a note off the plan. I don't see the authority for that. So I appreciate your consideration, but I still don't like this idea of having to go back and do something with that plan, because it's not as simple. I talked to Ron Johnson about this, who's a surveyor, did the boundary line adjustment plan in 2010, where he carried forward this note, and, you know, it's not just taking the old plan and just, you know, off the, you know, out of his file and just erasing that note and then submitting it again. There's much more work that these surveyors have to do in terms of getting out there and confirming all the information on the ground, locating pins, and basically creating a whole plan. So time is of the essence here, gentlemen. I mean, Gina has gone through a long ordeal, And, you know, this is really unnecessary, and I really appreciate your consideration of allowing her to go forward with her application, and by putting a note or a letter in the file that confirms that she will not have to address this note issue as part of the submission of her application for the certificate of zoning compliance. That's what I'm really looking for. So I hope you'll consider doing something along those lines.
Oh, this is Tom. I agree with Warren in that where this parcel of land does in fact meet all the requirements for a building lot, I think that the previous note on the plan is, I think right now that's irrelevant. And I don't think you want to make the existing property owner go through all additional hoops all over again to address the issue. I think that based on the fact that there is a septic system on that lot, and the lot can accommodate another house and a septic system without a problem, I think the selectmen are within their right to, you know, go ahead and issue a building permit for this family. I would agree with Warren with his interpretation.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, this is Jim. I don't subscribe to the concept that just because it was put on a thing, it has any actual legal standing. If it had said not a buildable lot, again, that condition changed when she got a design that was approved by DES, so that would be a moot point as well. So, it doesn't seem to rise to me to the level of something that has to go through a full formal documentary change of the building of the lot, because they've met all the conditions, and you know, again, as Warren said, we have no indication there was any kind of restriction or covenant made between the owners and the town, other than they wouldn't build for 10 years, which they haven't. So I don't see a need to go through a formal process. We can just go on record and say that doesn't restrict building as long as she has the appropriate septic design approved, which she does, and then let the process move forward.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I don't think this is reason enough to hold her up from doing what she needs to do. So I think we probably need to make a motion for this one.
This is Steve. Can I just add something?
Go ahead, Steve.
To Selectman Dick's question about whether there's legal standing there, we just don't have an answer on that. And I just got an email. Oh, sorry. I'm just trying to see if it is from NHMA. It's trying to refresh here. Okay, I don't see anything. So I think that, to my mind, that was all. That was the question: whether it's a legal issue. The last discussion I had with Warren Lake and with Gene Hill last week was that I suggested they could go to the planning board and for the planning board to make a decision. But whether it's made by them or by the selectmen, if it's not a legal issue in that regard, then I don't see any reason why it could not go forward. But that was an outstanding question. You know, so if that was going to happen, I just wanted to reiterate whether the deed, a revised deed, would refer to the existing plan. So that revised deed would have something in it saying that that note, not a building lot, is no longer required or necessary or, you know, not applicable. And they do have a septic design. So that's the only thing. It's just if you're going to do that, that there would be a deed that reflect, you know, that change that's happened.
Well, you know, there's not going to be a need for a new deed, Stephen. You know, Jean is the owner, and she's going to be the one building. So, and the, when they refer to deeds and plans, they just refer to them, but they don't go into the contents of them particularly. I mean, I'd have to think about if there's even a way to do it. You know, the deed, we can't get a corrective deed, number one. I mean, the Connollys are long gone. So they're the ones who sold the property to Gina. So there's no way to get a deed from them. So, you know, I just don't think it's possible. You know, if at the time Gina built a house, she sells the land to someone else, you know, at that time perhaps, you know, in the deed there could be some reference included. But right now I don't see how you're going to accomplish what you're asking for.
Again, and I don't see the need to do it while she still owns the property. And as you said, once the property gets sold, it'll be obvious because there'll be a house on the property, which was not there, you know, when she bought it.
Correct.
I think it's a self-correcting problem.
Yes.
Okay, then... trying to think how to word the motion.
Warren, do you have any recommendations?
I haven't thought of it, but, you know, what I was looking for, again, was something to clearly state that this issue with regard to the notes would not become a factor, would not be considered in the application for the Certificate of Zoning Compliance, and I was looking for that to go into the file. So, I mean, if you made a motion, you know, something along the lines of, you know, that you're moving to allow Regina Hill to submit her certificate of zoning compliance application to the town. Without further consideration of the issues raised concerning notes on earlier subdivision plans.
Yeah.
That's a rough draft. Let's see, we want to refine that. You're not authorized. You're concurring in, let's see, you're concurring with the determination that, that the issue of notes on the plan affecting her land, the land of Regina Beth Hill, the issue of notes on the plan of plans, plural, affecting the land of Regina Beth Hill, will not be taken into consideration with respect to her application for a certificate of zoning compliance to construct a new home on a 3.2-acre lot.
I think I like that one better than the first one.
Yeah.
I'm doing my best here. I'm winging it.
Yeah, John, I was going to suggest something like, you know, the note on the deed regarding, quote, not a building lot, unquote, for 15 Plummer Road, tax map 4, lot 59, will not restrict issuance of a certificate of zoning compliance if all other conditions are met.
Sounds good.
There you go. I'll second that. Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. As per what I said before, I will do a roll call vote. Selectman
yes.
Tom Solitello?
Yes.
Selectman Jim Dick?
Yes.
Selectman John Olmsted votes yes. Motion passes unanimously.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, Warren, I hope that solves the problem.
All right. I think it should, and we'll go forward with submitting that application for the zoning compliance certificate. So thank you. I'll sign off. Have a very good evening. Bye-bye.
Okay. And, Steve, I would still like to hear what Steve Buckley has to say about that.
Yes. Okay, so I'm just looking again, but yeah, I don't have anything right now.
Yeah, hopefully he'll get back to you tomorrow.
Yes, yeah, I heard, I understand that word of mouth or through the grapevine that they are running a little bit behind now at NHMA, so unfortunately. So once that application's for CZC is submitted, the only thing I would need to do is just go do a site visit. So it's like, you know, 10 minutes. Go out there and just take a look, verify the location of where they want to put the house. But, you know, that's just something that's going to happen once they submit the application. So everything else is in order.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, John, this is Jim. I just want to say, you know, I appreciate Steve's diligence on this. I mean, he's clearly just trying to make sure that he keeps the town out of any kind of legal trouble, and I understand that. I think we had a situation here where, you know, there was a little bit of flexibility in leeway, and, you know, and he did the right thing, you know, referring it to the board so we could discuss it and come up with a solution.
Yeah, Steve, that was very good thought and very good planning.
Thank you.
So, okay, I guess we're through with that one. My screen just disappeared on me. Okay, there we go. Now I'm back. Okay, I think we have solved that problem. And the next thing under new business is the RFP for IT support.
Yep. This is Trish. I had been talking with some of the other department heads about how we can better utilize some of the IT services that we're receiving and maybe sort of kind of pull them in together and also be able to better budget with, because our current IT provider we don't have a contract with that person, that vendor. So it's sort of been a little bit hard to plan and budget some of these changes that we're trying to, you know, updates or whatever that we're trying to do. And it came to us that maybe it's time to sort of put out an RFP to see where we're at with our IT services and where we might, what it might look like going forward. So I guess I'm looking for your guys' approval or any sort of input that you might have on this particular draft and basically the go-ahead with the ultimate go-ahead with it to roll it out as soon as we can so we can sort of see what we're looking for or looking at for the next budget cycle.
Okay. I looked over what you've given us, and it looks pretty comprehensive.
I borrowed some things. It's not all mine. I just have to say that out loud.
Well, that's okay. You knew where to get it.
Yeah.
Excuse me, may I interrupt a minute? This is Gina Hill. Am I supposed to sit in with you on this or not?
No, I think we have solved your case.
Okay.
You can sit in as a member of the public or if you'd like.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. I think I will go along. I've got to tend to my son. Okay. Thank you very much.
Have a nice night.
I think in talking with Warren Hill, we've solved your problem and look forward to seeing your paperwork coming in.
Okay. I've been through so many meetings and discussions with yes, go ahead, no, you can't, yes, you can, no, you can't. Is there something that you can send to me in writing regarding this meeting that would say that I'm allowed to go ahead or whatever? Because, like I said, I've been back and forth so many times, I haven't dared to put the house on the market because it's just doesn't get solved.
Trish, do you want to put just a memo or a letter together that you
can
send off to
her
with the
do that.
Yeah, with the findings of tonight's meeting.
Yep.
Okay. I would appreciate it.
Yeah.
You can probably understand my apprehension.
I can understand, yes.
Okay. Attorney Lake has my address, or I can give it to you now, or my email address, or however you would like it.
I have your email address, and I will also make sure that Attorney Lake gets a copy of the letter as well.
Oh, wonderful. I thank you so much, all of you.
You're welcome.
And I'll stop interfering with your meeting.
Have a great night.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Okay, back to the draft of the RFP.
Yes.
Jim, did you have a chance to look at it? You and Tom, did you get a chance to look at it?
I looked at it.
Yeah, I had gone over it with Trish, and I think it looked pretty good. You know, the idea was just to be as detailed as we can so that somebody can give us an accurate estimate of what it's going to cost, not, you know, just hope make something up, you know. So that's why we have the list of specific hardware and equipment that they'll be dealing with. That ought to make it pretty easy for them to estimate.
I thought that was a good touch, having all of the equipment listed so they could see what they're working with.
Yeah.
And there's more. I added more to it. I got a better updated list from the police department this afternoon. So.
Okay, great.
Their inventory will be added as well.
Trish, did you ever hear from Mark at the library if they wanted to include their stuff?
Oh, you know what? I forgot to even run it by her, but I'll write it down right now so that I won't forget.
Okay. Marsha a couple weeks ago, and she was complaining about her IT support, so I mentioned that Trish is working on this, so, you know, we could put it in. If they don't want to use it, they don't have to, but at least we could, you know, get our estimates based on supporting their equipment. And they do have some security issues because they have the public-facing website and the access for the card catalog and all that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I would need to know about those too. Okay. Yep.
Yep. Being a former IT manager, this is the kind of document I would be looking for.
Okay, good. That's good to know.
Hey, John, it's the chief.
Yeah. Go ahead,
Chief. Hi, Chief.
Hi. Hey, I would just like to add that I'm in 100% support of this RFP that Trish has put together. I think it's certainly well-timed. You know, we've all had challenges with IT services over the last few years. And I think that this will be a welcomed approach to improving our IT services in town because they are very splintered right now. So I support this immensely.
Yeah, they have been as long as I've been a selectman. I know we've had IT problems. Okay, yeah, and Trish, I think it's, as far as I'm concerned, go ahead and put this out as soon as you can get it out.
Okay, I'll do that.
Yes, I agree.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes. Okay, Julie, are you on the line? Julie?
While we were chatting, I forgot to message her to call in. I apologize.
Okay, do you want to move on to some other stuff and see if you can get a hold of her?
Sure.
What is all that noise in the background?
I don't know.
I can't hear a thing.
It sounds like somebody's going through a waterfall. Okay, well, while Trish is trying to get a hold of Julie, I'll move on to the things under other business. One of the items under other business is remote meeting update, and I asked Trish to put that in there because I would like to maybe once, at least for the next few weeks or months, I'd kind of like to touch on this each meeting or every other meeting just to bring up where we are and what we're doing and discuss whether we still need to be meeting remote or whether we need to, whether we can come back. With the COVID spiking the way it is here in New Hampshire, I think it's to our best ability to and best interest and safety to continue meeting remotely for the time being. The other reason that I am bringing this up is because I want the public to know where we are and what we're doing and how we're trying to keep everything safe. Because I know there are a lot of people that wind up listening to this tape or reading the minutes. And for their information, I want them to know why we're doing this. So unless anybody else has any heartburn with it, I would like to continue meeting remotely for the time being.
I agree with John.
Yeah,
okay,
Jim. Right now is, you know, it's kind of the wait and see time. I think this makes a lot of sense and sets a good example for everybody.
Yeah, I know. I've angered the chairman of the planning board because he didn't want to meet remotely. Tomorrow night they're having a
public hearing.
Yeah, a public hearing on the amendment that's going into the the ballot, and it's going to be a little bit harder to have a virtual or a remote public meeting, but I still think it's the safest way. Is everybody still there?
Yeah, where is that interference coming from?
I have no idea.
Hey, John?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the chief. Hey, listen, so as the emergency management director, I definitely support as much remote meetings as you can do. Because we are starting to see, again, an influx, an increase in our caseloads in the state as well as in the town of Samberton. So anything we can do to restrict that contact person to person is, I think, in the best interest of everybody.
Yeah, I know in the past 2 to 3 weeks, the Samberton numbers have almost doubled. I follow those every day. Yeah, I follow those every day. So, and that was part of my reasoning for going to remote meetings, and that's my reason right now for staying in remote. Okay. Trish, have you gotten Julie back yet?
I thought that she just said she was going to log in. Julie, are you there?
I don't see her.
Okay, I don't hear her. So there's one other item under old business, and that was the budget review timeline. We're doing the town clerk tax collector tonight, and I believe we're doing the library next meeting.
Yeah, so I gave a updated schedule to Trish, but I think next week we could do highway, station, and library. The library is very straightforward. It's not an issue. Really, the only hard one in there is transfer station, and that's only because he does have such a big increase in his budget, and that's really driven by outside factors he can't control. I think we should consider maybe doing a Thursday meeting next week if everybody could support it, so we could take care of
Julie's here.
Hey, Tool. And we could take care of the two remaining, which would be executive and recreation. And I've been.
Do you want to do
that? So that would be the 10th?
Yeah. Yeah, the 10th at 2 o'clock.
You talk? The 10th at 2 o'clock? Sure. Yes, it would be remote.
Okay.
The only thing after that would be the CIPC recommendations, which we could do as part of the regular meeting on we've got a meeting on the 16th. No, we don't. Second night. And then we can do that on the 23rd. And that should wrap it up.
Okay, that sounds good. So the 10th at 2 o'clock would be a remote meeting?
Yeah.
All right, I'll get those posted, and I will let the highway transfer and library know that they're going to be on next week's agenda.
Like I said, I think two of those are pretty straightforward and relatively easy.
Yeah.
Okay, and I think I heard Julie come on.
Speaking of.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, so why don't we move back up to the town clerk tax collector's budget, and we'll review that at this point. Okay, anybody have any questions?
It's not a question, but I just want to commend Julie. You know, she's done an excellent job after her first full year in the job of really getting her arms around all the moving parts to her budget. And, you know, it's a great example of, you know, she's added where she needs to, but she's backed off where she knows she can. And, you know, the net result, if you look at the town clerk tax collector side, not the elections, the 3.6% reduction over last year, which is helpful when everything else seems to be creeping up a little bit.
Yes, it
I could find some new things to add.
No.
Don't push your luck.
Resubmit 90 days for further disapproval. I have to agree with Jim on this. I think not only on the budget, but I think in several other areas of your job, you have excelled in what you're doing. And I know talking to some of the people from what you put together, you and Tim put together for the election, that kudos came fast and wild for that.
Well, thank you, John.
So,
Jim, Jim and John, Ray Massey here. May I?
Yeah, go ahead, Ray. Go ahead, Ray.
I guess I'm. There must be a budget update for town clerk tax collector that I don't have, and I'm scratching my head trying to.
I emailed it to you. Did you get that email when I emailed you and Jim?
This is a. I have a version. Has there been a new one, a changed one?
No, I just sent one, and it said when I sent it out, it said first draft. It said first draft town clerk tax collector.
What's the town clerk tax collector bottom line on the version you guys are looking at for 22?
The 135663.
Okay.
Is that what you have?
That's what I have. Yeah, I'm just. I'm wondering, well, because the comment, Jim, you made a comment that it was a reduction, and maybe I'm misinterpreting, because it's last year's budget was 121.
But we didn't have retirement in it last year.
Ah, yes.
And I think Jim was.
Well, retirement's 12.
Yeah, I think Jim was talking about reductions in certain line items, not overall.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure I was on the right budget. I'm okay.
Well, you are right, Ray. It isn't down 125,597.
Well, if you add up everything with election, then it is.
Well, election is going to be way down. And if I'd like to just speak to election if I could. So next year, we only have one election, which is a town election. So it should go way down. Then the second year, we'll have two. You know, I have a schedule of all the elections. And in 4 years, we'll have four more. So the election schedule will tick, tick, tick right up, and then it'll go back down. So that one is definitely moving all the time.
Okay. Ray, do you have anything else?
No, I'm fine. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure I had the right sheet.
Okay. Jim, you have anything? Tom, do you have anything?
No, I'm fine.
All right. John, sorry, I was on mute. Julie, did you have anything else you wanted to talk about? Any additional costs we might see from the COVID procedures? And I mean, I see you've increased postage in some places. And
yeah, well, that's the only thing. You know, we're mailing out the registrations, and unfortunately, people don't mail them all back. And you know, we're paying to mail them as a convenience and trying to entice them to mail them back so there's less people in the office. I will tell you, this month we put a different letter in with all of them, and we're getting a nice response. And people are doing great about making appointments and using the mail slot. And we try to get those out the next day, get them right back to people. So if the only thing we could do is, if we wanted, is maybe next July to add a fee on to mail those. And there's a system set up that it's $1. Most towns do it. If we mail it to you, it's $1, and we don't charge, and they don't have to put a self-addressed envelope to send it back. We'll just mail it back, and that covers the postage. But it's $1 per vehicle if we were to mail them. That's one thing we could do.
Hey, Julie, I have a question. You're going to mail the car registrations off to people?
We do. We did. We got December out. We've been doing that monthly.
Okay. My question is, I called and left a message. I didn't know if I could come on Friday and pay my car registrations or not, or make an
You can. You can. We can make you an appointment. We would prefer, unless you're paying cash, we would prefer you to mail them or put them through the mail slot. But we will gladly make an appointment for you.
Okay. So when I get to Linda's registrations for a car, just make out a check and put it in a slot for you guys.
Yeah, and we'll mail it right back out to you.
Okay.
If you want to come in, that's not a problem.
Okay, I can come in Friday then and do that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. The other thing we could look at, too, is not that I want to increase revenues, but we charge $250 per registration. Everybody around is at $3. So that is something we could look at to help offset the cost of this office, too.
So just on a personal note, it's okay if I stop by Friday afternoon and pay for my car registration in January?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
You're fine.
I think that it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea following up on what John Armstrong said about the continuing the teleconference stuff. I think it's really good the town office and tax collector really clamp down on people coming into the town office without wearing masks. They should have masks required if they come through that door. And I think that's something that is totally reasonable and that people need to understand that that's pretty important stuff going on right now. And you can't just discount that and do what you please. And I think it's good that we put some requirements on the public in terms of their obligations. So I think that was a good, I support that move. And I support John Olmsted's going to a teleconference meeting for the near term anyway.
Okay, Julie, I think that $3 fee, I think, is something we should very strongly consider.
Well, yeah, it would be a 50-cent increase on every vehicle. I'll run some numbers, and once we get through this next tax season, we can talk about it. So, if we're going to do it, I mean, it's a way to help offset the cost of this office.
Yeah, and that would be a good thing.
Yes. But that's all I have.
Okay. And Jim, you want to make your usual motion?
Sure. I'll make a motion that we approve the town clerk tax collector budgets for line items 4140 and 4151 for FY22 in the amount of $135,663.
I'll second that.
And I will second that motion.
Okay.
We have a motion and a second on the floor. Is there any discussion of the motion?
Jim, I'm sorry, Ray Massey again. Did you get that number right? Because you stated both accounts, but you gave the number for one, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, correct. So, John, amend the motion that for 4140 in the amount of $5,027. And 4151 in the amount of $135,663. Thanks, Ray.
Okay, my second still stands. Is there any discussion of the motion? Thank you for that correction, Ray.
That's my job.
Keep us honest. Keep us honest. Okay, hearing none, I will do a roll call vote. Selectman Tom Salatello.
Yes.
Selectman Jim Dick.
Yes.
Selectman John Olmstead votes yes. Motion motion passes unanimously. Okay,
nice job,
moving
Julie.
On. Go ahead.
Thanks, Julie.
It's a nice job,
Thank
Julie.
Thank you. Oh, you're welcome, and I'm going to sign out and get some more tax dollars in. All right,
Woo!
Talk to you guys
okay.
later. Bye-bye.
Have a good evening. Okay, that brings us down to item number four, the town administrator's report.
Yep, so Terry got some correspondence from the Belknap County Registry of Deeds that they're moving to a new software system, and they just needed the town to sign off on that. There's no cost involved. They just needed our okay. You'll see all of the backup with their and I just wanted to make sure that before we had Terry sign off on it that you guys are okay with that and before we go forward.
Okay. I assume they have done adequate testing on this system.
I assume so, but I wouldn't know. It was the registry sent it to Terry and the they have the backup from the Monarch company, given their what they need and stuff like that. So I would assume, but I don't think that we're given a choice, actually, as it turns out.
Yeah. So, John, I mean, I read through it, and this is the way they've implemented it minimizes the risk from a cybersecurity standpoint, and this is a product that's used across the country, so it's. I think we're in pretty good shape.
Okay, I'd never heard of it. That's why I asked.
Yeah.
Then I would make a motion that we authorize Terry Jansky to sign for the town of Samberton. For the installation of the software Monarch.
This is Jim, I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Any discussion of the motion? Hearing none, I will do a roll call vote. Selectman Tom Salatello.
Yes.
Selectman Jim Dick.
Yes.
Selectman John Olmstead votes yes. This motion passes unanimously. Trish, would you notify Terry that she can go ahead and tell them to get ready to install it?
Yep, I will do that. Thank you.
Okay.
And
I assume she can fill out that one page that gives all the names and contact numbers.
Yeah, I'm confident that she can do that.
Okay.
And then the other thing was the Belknap County delegation is having a public hearing on December 8th to discuss the budget and, I guess, the Gunstock Timber Plan Agreement. Anyway, so they sent their correspondence and the backup budget information, which is in your read folder.
Okay.
And that's all I have for you guys tonight.
Okay. Okay, then that leaves us with the signatures have already been done. Selectman's report. I have a planning board meeting and a public hearing tomorrow night, which should be interesting since we're doing it remotely. Other than that, there was no recreation meeting for December, so there won't be any report on that from me. And that's all I've got. Jim?
Yeah, a couple things. So CIP committee finished up its work on Monday. So we're going to meet next Monday to approve the final spreadsheet, and then that'll come to the board for our review and decision on what to move to the budget committee. The biggest change from what we've talked about, so when we got done with all of the capital outlays for next year, we were about $50,000 higher than we were, I'm sorry, outlays for next year, we were about $50,000 higher than we were last year. And capital outlays was a large portion of the budgeting or the tax rate increase this year. So we went back and took a hard look at where we could reduce. And as you recall, we talked about the board's inputs. We had already cut back. We eliminated the milfoil payment. We're going to pay that out of the CRF this year. Cut back on the old town hall. Cut back on the building and the facilities repair and improvement. So and there were a couple of things that were driving that increase. One of them was adding transfer station equipment because we haven't done that, and that was a hit. There was also a payment for one of the highway trucks that got left out last year, so that went up. So the CIP committee voted to do two things. We're going to only put in $100,000 for the bridge repair fund this year as opposed to the $150,000 that we were planning. And they voted to eliminate the Old Town Hall CRF payment this year, which was going to be $20,000. And I think, you know, in light of the fact that we don't have a steward, we don't have a plan, you know, we have $100,000 in that fund already, that the one-year pause to keep us below where we were last year and not add any additional tax burden on top of what happened before seemed like a good idea. So that'll come back when they vote on the final spreadsheet. We'll have a chance to reconsider it. You know, at the end of the day, we get to put forward whatever recommendations we want to the budget committee. But I didn't think that was unreasonable given the circumstances and trying to keep things down. And in fact, we ended up 18,000 below last year, which will take 3 cents off the tax rate, which is a move in the right direction. We had a joint meeting last night with the budget committee and the building committee and presented the status of our efforts on the building projects. It was I think, well received by the building committee members. We spent a lot of time, as you can imagine, talking about the finances and the tax rate impacts and all of that. And I think, you know, they were in general concurrence, and hopefully they'll be issuing a formal position on it here in the next few weeks. But they thought it was a good plan to move forward and were generally supportive, not of a specific option because they're all in about the same price range and cost, so the same tax impact. But compared to the 2019 plan, I think everybody agreed it was reasonable. It takes care of the problems, and it's, you know, at a cost that, you know, nobody wants to pay more, but it definitely, is a reasonable amount for the problems we're trying to take care of. So that was all very positive. The building committee will now meet tomorrow night and see where we want to end up with, whether we're going to come back to the board with a single proposal on a design or how that's going to work. Right now we're kind of toying with three different options based on the feedback we've gotten. And the plan right now is for the building committee to come present to us as the board on December 23rd, our last meeting, and provide recommendations. So it's all been, we're not there yet, but it's all been going pretty well. And I think that's
sounds like it's shaping up pretty good.
Yeah, nothing is new, and the ideas we're talking about now are ones we had looked at and had kind of put aside, but now they're coming back, and that's the problem when you have so many choices. It's really it's easy to get in a do loop and start believing, oh yeah, that was a good idea. Why don't we go back to that? So. We'll have it nailed down by the time we come to the board on the 23rd. I think they'll have a solid solid set of recommendations on what to do.
But I think with having that number of choices, I think has gotten the public involved in it, and I think that was one of the big concerns of the previous one, was that the public wasn't involved in it.
Yeah, I wish more people had been. But the people who did participate in any of our meetings, really, every time we had a resident or voters participate, we got good questions, good thoughts, good feedback, and it's really been helpful. So if nothing else, I can't say we didn't try. I mean, we did 8 public presentations of the design. So.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay, Tom, do you have anything?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay, that's it for the select board reports. The only other thing that we have on here is to... where is it? I would make a motion that we approve the Samberton Board of Selectmen's meeting minutes for November 18th, 2020, with any corrections.
This is Jim. I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. I assume everybody has gotten their corrections into to the proper people.
Yep.
To Trish or to Sue.
Yep.
Again, Sue, this is an excellent job.
Thank you.
It'll be even easier next week with the recording.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
He remembered to push the button tonight. Well, I
got a text to remind me, so we're good.
Okay, as we've been doing, I will call for a roll call vote. Selectman Tom Solotello?
Yes.
Selectman Jim Dick?
Yes.
And Selectman John Olmstead votes yes. Motion passes unanimously. Again, Sue, thank you for the excellent job.
Thank you, and thank you, Trish, for polishing it up.
Yeah, no worries.
Okay. It was a joint effort. Good job. All right, where's my moral minority?
The loyal minority makes a motion that we adjourn until, what's the next date, the 18th?
The 9th.
The 9th.
The 9th of December at 5 o'clock.
This is Jim, I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Any discussion? No, that's right, it's a non-debatable motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Selectman Tom Solotello?
Aye.
Selectman Jim Dick?
Yes.
Selectman John Olmstead votes yes. Motion passes unanimously. I got carried away with myself there. All right. I will see you all on next Wednesday at 5 o'clock.
All right.
Same channel, same station.
Thank you.
Stay safe.
Thank you all.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye-bye.